This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'd like now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Juliana Ciano. She's co-founder of Reunity Resources, which is having an event this Saturday, the 4th of June, from noon to 5 at the Rail Yard Park, which we'll be talking about in a moment. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Great to have you. Now, this is a nonprofit company mm-hmm. with a mission of zero waste, and that is in several areas. What does zero waste mean? I mean, there's always waste.
Correct. So zero waste is, it's an optimistic and lofty phrase because the way our systems work right now, you're right, something is always going to end up in the landfill the way our larger systems work right now. But what we're trying to do is help particularly commercial endeavors. We work predominantly with restaurants and also with the public school district to make their waste less. We want to turn their waste into something valuable. The name Reunity Resources comes from the word reunite. We want to reunite our resources. We have this linear stream vision where we can buy something, use it for a short amount of time, and then throw it away, in air quotes.
Right.
But there's no such place as away.
Exactly.
It goes somewhere. And so this social enterprise came to be because we thought, shouldn't the place that it goes be our own community? And couldn't we make something valuable out of this waste rather than, you know, burying it in the landfill, having it end up in the ocean, et cetera, et cetera. And so the components of zero waste are many, from different manufacturing processes to refuse is the fourth R of the reduce, reuse, recycle.
Refuse. What does that mean?
It means come first. Refuse to buy it. Refuse the excess stuff, right? We have this cultural obsession, it seems, with more stuff and more is better and we need to buy new things. And what if we just refuse it?
Well, and the thing is, what do you refuse? I remember a couple of years ago, there was a documentary about plastic water bottles, and I was getting ready to do the interview, and I was watching it. And as I was watching it, I ordered a water fizzer so that I wouldn't have to buy any more sparkling water.
Right.
And I think that, I mean, I don't know at this point really that many people who are so obsessed with stuff. It's just that in order to stay alive and stay functional in this system, mm-hmm. we're pretty much forced to, because we can't make our own almost anything anymore.
Right.
Buy stuff of one kind or another. And so then it's like, where are you buying it from and what kind of waste is it putting into the system?
Exactly. And so as much as refuse is a convenient verb, it's more about thoughtful consumption.
Yeah.
Where are we buying things? What is it packaged in? Where are the dollars going? Are they staying in our community? That's our big goal, is let's keep it in our community. And so with some of our clients, so predominantly restaurants and the public school system, we collect their used cooking oil and then we turn it into biodiesel. So a nasty waste, actually, you know, pollutes the water and has all kinds of unsustainable potential end uses.
Where does it go? It goes into the, if people don't recycle it the way you're doing, it goes into the water system?
We hope not. It would be illegal to do so. It happens sometimes if people don't know what to do with it. The other thing that often happens for large quantities of used cooking oil is that it gets collected by a company that may send it all the way to China to turn it into pet food, to send it all the way back to feed to our pets. And so,
oh my goodness! Again,
on the one hand, it's like, well, that's a beneficial reuse, yes. And how many thousands of miles of freight are we talking about here?
Yeah, what's the carbon footprint of that?
Insanity, insanity, right? And so this is all, it stays right in New Mexico. You know, we process it into biodiesel and then redistribute that here. And biodiesel from recycled oil has just an incredibly tiny, tiny footprint. For instance, for one unit of energy that you spend to get petroleum out of the earth, you get about 0.6 units of energy back in the form of gasoline or diesel. So talk about an unsustainable idea, right?
Yeah.
One unit of energy for a little more than half back. Oof, bad investment, petroleum. But biodiesel, it's at least 1 to 6.
So for every unit of energy that you spend processing old used cooking oil, you get 6 units of energy out.
At least. And that factor actually comes if you're using virgin sunflower oil. So the number kind of goes off the charts once you're reusing oil, because it would have been a waste stream.
And, right.
You know, so it's just a phenomenal difference in terms of how much energy you spend and how much energy you get back.
So how does that actually work? You go around with some kind of vehicle collecting this nasty old oil.
Yeah, it's a glamour job. Welcome to entrepreneurship. Super glamorous.
And then you go back to somewhere, and then what?
Well, so we collect it with a pump in a tank. Our truck runs on biodiesel. And then we store it until we have a tanker load. And we work with, there's only one certified tax because it's a fuel, right? You can't just make it in your garage and sell it to people. It needs road taxes and it needs to pass all kinds of inspections. So there's one facility in New Mexico that does all that, and we partner with them. So when we're ready, they send their tanker and fill it up and process the oil, and we buy back the finished biodiesel from them for redistribution.
And then how do you redistribute it?
We have a hilarious it's sort of like a fishing house on a trailer with a fuel tank inside of it. It's a co-op style. We have a biofuel collective. But it's really, you know, mom and pop. So it's kind of like, here's the cash box and here's the combo lock to get the nozzle drive up. Honor system. Okay, I put in 10 gallons. I'll put my cash in the box.
Really?
Yep.
Where is it?
Really. We're at the Santa Fe Community Farm on San Ysidro Crossing.
And so this is something, and I think there are so many examples of this in the world right now, that is such a small scale that it's just a drop in the ocean in terms of actually making a difference, and yet it's setting an example of what could be done on a larger scale.
Exactly, exactly. And it's that whole question of how do we make this accessible to the larger system? And that part of our goal as an organization is to be sustainable, in the health of the organization. And so finding the level of capital it would take to have an underground fueling station on St. Mike's or something, or even an above ground tank, is so prohibitive right now that this is what we're doing, and it feels right, so it's worth doing, even though it's obviously not sending anybody to college, you know.
Right. And these are, I mean, I think there is this phenomenon that's going on right now, which is that the industrial system is alive and well, or maybe alive and not that well, and a lot of people are realizing that unsustainable is exactly what it means, which is that it's not going to last forever, and maybe it's not going to last very much longer at all, and won't break down all at once. It'll break down in pieces.
Uh-huh.
And pretty much everybody who thinks about it feels a mixture of dread and what can I do?
Right.
And this is sort of, I feel like this is part of that.
That ties so perfectly, actually, into the reason that we're creating this event on Saturday and the reason for this whole business, our composting work, our biofuel work, and this event, is that ever since I was a kid, I have felt saddled with that dread and kind of anger, resentment. I remember I had this fabulous third grade teacher, Mrs. Rickheim, wherever you are, who really pushed the environmental issues that you can when your students are 8. But I remember being this kind of spitfire 8-year-old, like, what? You're not going to recycle the peanut butter jar? And then my dad would maybe say something like, well, but think about how much water it takes to wash it out, and what's better? Always thinking about these things. And I don't operate well in a state of dread.
Yeah.
And I don't operate well in a state of anger. And I don't think those are the states that are going to lead to change. And so this organization and this event, which is called the Reusapalooza, is all about how do we make this fun? How do we celebrate the fact that we are endlessly creative, totally resilient, and have most of the skills that we need as long as we continue to cultivate them as we move forward? We know how to upcycle. We know how to garden. We need to help each other because some of these skills have been buried, but we can do it. And why don't we just have a really fun time while we're doing it also, instead of going around with this attitude of, oh, we're all going to die. The oceans are filled with plastic. Your breast milk is laced with Agent Orange. It's hopeless. That's no way to get through the day, you know? So what if we say, oh, look at this cool thing that I can make with my old bicycle tubes, and what can we do with local foods, and how do we improve our soil so that it grows more easily? Because it's not easy growing in the high desert here.
Right, right. Which you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, besides all the other things that you're doing,
right.
You're sort of doing a very small family farm.
Absolutely, because we got to walk the talk, right? This is what feels important to us, and for the longevity of our family, it's how do we figure this out? Well, the only way to learn is to try.
We're talking to Juliana Ciano of Reunity Resources. Now, one of the other things that you do besides the biofuel piece is compost.
Correct.
Tell us about that.
So a little more than 2 years ago, after a long process working with city government to get approval for this, we began a commercial food scraps collection program. So we work with restaurants and the Santa Fe Public School District and a number of charters and private schools. And we go around and train them how to source separate, putting all of their food scraps, and depending on what products they use, napkins, straw wrappers, etc., if they're paper or compostable materials. And then we collect those bins once, twice, three times a week, depending on the establishment, and bring them back to our commercial composting facility, where we mix them with horse manure, green waste, and use a pretty cool aerated static pile system, which is super efficient at cooking up good compost.
So that smells almost as good as the used cooking oil.
You know, talk about glamour. This is really where it's at. You get 64 gallon barrels of food slop, rejected Frito pies, and rotten avocados. And what's amazing about the system, though, is that it actually smells very little. So at home, if you're composting, you probably think about either spinning a tumbler or turning a pile with a pitchfork or a shovel. But what we do, because our volume is so huge, if you can imagine a very long, like a 6-inch PVC pipe that's 50 feet long, and every foot there's a quarter-sized hole in it, and there's a cap on one end and a special fan that takes very little energy to run on the other. We connect that to a timer and inject short blasts of air to the inside of this long, it's called a windrow. It's taller than I am and, you know, at least 8 feet wide at the base. We inject air to the inside, and the temperature is a minimum of 130 and more like 150, 160 a lot of days. And so what that does is, A, it prevents any gnarly smells from anaerobic compost. That's what we call when things rot without oxygen. It's anaerobic,
yeah.
And it's producing super nasty climate changing methane. That's that nasty, nasty smell. And so this doesn't do that. It's aerobic. It's a living decomposition system that's so hot it breaks down in about 30 days. And from our clients, we can accept everything. If it grows, it goes, we say. So we can
old
do
hamburger pieces.
Old hamburger pieces. We can do chicken bones. We can do avocado pits, mango pits, citrus peels, eggshells, things that you would want to leave out at home, because at home scale, it's hard to ever get that level of heat because you simply don't have the volume to make it happen. But we have a level of heat that will break down all of that big stuff in about a month. And then after that, we let it cure for about a month, and at that point is when all the beneficial microorganisms and fungi can come in and really go to town, because actually 130 to 160 is too hot for those forms of life. So then it cures for at least a month, maybe longer, and that's when we see it come to life.
Now, why does compost get so hot?
Well, that's a good question. So everything that's alive rots. It's a natural process, and the process of rotting creates natural heat. You can think of it similarly to a fire that you need to pump a little air into it. A fire needs oxygen to get really hot. The same is true for something that's rotting. So if it's wrapped in plastic and buried in the landfill, it's not getting any air to it. It's rotting at a cool temperature, very slowly producing a lot of methane. Not a good thing. But when we can manage it, so we're managing a carbon-nitrogen ratio, basically, you know, obviously it's more complicated than that, but yeah. Basically we mix mulch and wood chips, etc. We call it green waste, but it's the high carbon materials, anything that's dead, dry, crunchy. We're mixing that with the food waste, which we call green waste. Or the green, it's funny, it's a little confusing. So the yard scraps are called green waste, but technically they're browns. Because they usually look brown and crunchy.
Right.
And then browns indicate carbon. And then the greens, which is confusing because
like
the opposite.
Old food scraps,
you know, like your rotten lettuce, we call the greens, and the greens are high nitrogen. So it's a little confusing lingo. Sorry about that. But so we have the food waste with the yard waste, to clarify. And the food waste is higher nitrogen. The yard waste is higher carbon. And we're managing that ratio so that the heat, and then with the air we add to it, we're constantly monitoring temperature and moisture and making sure that we're really kind of stewarding that rotting process to make enough heat. Because it's really about making a good soil. What we want to be doing is building our local food systems and doing that from the ground up, because it's hard to grow in sand. And so if we're building a soil, we need to have, we need to make sure that we're killing any pathogens or weed seeds by getting to that high temperature, and really making sure that the product we have has been cooked, sort of the industry word, cook the compost, and then you let it cure. And that's where we're really looking at boosting the microorganism content, because that's what more and more research is showing really, really boosts yields.
So when you have that kind of compost that's full of microorganisms, which at first is counterintuitive to people who think that bacteria are all bad for you and things like
sure.
that soil should be sterile, it's exactly the opposite. It's those microorganisms that make for really healthy plants and really nutritious plants.
Exactly right. The mineral content of the soil affects the mineral content of your food. And because of the diversity of feedstock that we're putting into the compost, we have a lot of mineral content going in there. And it's similar. Sometimes I like to compare soil to a coral reef, where we might have this idea that it's some kind of static thing, like it's a noun, it's a coral reef, or it's soil. But really they're verbs. The closer you get to them, you see them teeming with life, and there's nothing static about it. And that's the sign of the healthy system.
So you've got this compost that you're making in this lovely, not very smelly system. Where does it go?
Well, we are in partnership with the Santa Fe Community Farm. So our facility is on 1829 San Isidro Crossing, right between Agua Fria and Alameda. And a portion of our compost goes directly to the farm, which ties us into the food security loop we want to be in. The community farm has a neighborhood food stand, but predominantly donates all of their produce to Kitchen Angels and the Food Depot. And beyond that, we sell it from the yard to gardeners, landscapers, farmers, and anybody who wants to get into it.
There is this whole idea of a closed loop, and one of my favorite examples is from the at the Colorado alligator farm. they've got this system where they've got plants growing above a tank and fish growing in the tank, and then
sure.
the water is pumped up and the fish poop fertilizes the plants. We have the same thing going on here in the parking lot of the Montañita Co-op supermarket. Mm-hmm. There's that little house, and I didn't know what it was, and they're doing that
yep,
in
exactly.
there, too.
Yep, exactly. It's aquaponics.
That's the word for it. So that's a closed-loop system. And when you think about agriculture and compost, what would a closed loop system be like? In other words, like, okay, you're growing asparagus, and then I'm eating the asparagus, and so my waste isn't going back, or the waste, the kitchen waste that I have isn't going back to the compost. So what does the loop look like?
Right, good question. So if we kind of zoom out to the big loop, a lot of the restaurants we work with participate in a farm-to-restaurant type program, or they work with a local organization called Squash Blossom, which does a lot of local food sourcing. And then we're also working with the Santa Fe Farmers Market. And so if they're getting their produce from local farmers, which places like Restaurant Martine do a lot of local sourcing, or Il Piatto, etc., then we're selling our compost back to the farmers at the farmers market at a reduced rate, because we want to encourage volume use. Because if you're trying to farm at any scale, the amount of compost you can use is sort of humbling. It's like, well, let's cover 3 acres with 6 inches. That's a lot of cubic yards.
Yeah.
And so really making it work on the level of the farming system. And so the loop is really that the produce is going to these restaurants, the waste from that, you know, that produce, et cetera, we're collecting it, composting it, and then it goes back to the farmers to enrich their soil, to make their lives a little easier.
And so this is very much of a local model.
Absolutely.
And this local model could, in theory, be replicated in any town.
Mm-hmm.
Does it depend on restaurants to work?
What we've found is that there is a certain level of restaurant density that a town would need to make it work for the health of the business. Otherwise, there would have to be some other revenue stream to make the business going, you know.
Right.
Right. But what you bring up is really what our vision is, that it isn't about a small business becoming a large business. That's not the trajectory we're on. But it's like, how do we make a really healthy and replicable small business for many towns that have 50,000, even 30,000? You know, what would the turning points be that someone or a family could earn their living by doing something helpful for their local food system?
Right, right. We're talking to Juliana Ciano, and there is an event this weekend from noon to 5 at the Rail Yard Park. It's on Saturday, the 4th of June. What are you going to be doing there? You were talking about it a little bit.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We've got live music, we've got local food trucks, and we've got an array of upcycled artists and upcycled carnival games and interactive educational exhibits. So it's really going to be a blast. The goal is to make it super hands-on, a good place to hang out for the afternoon, listening to music, having some local food, and doing these different games. So it's really going to be a blast for people of all ages. We've got sponsorship from Palo Santo Design, Second Street Brewery, Verve Gallery, Kathy Holian, and the Rail Yard Commission. And we've got a packed stage. We're starting with the Partizani Brass Band, which are just a blast, vintage style marching band dance party. And then we've got great artists. Like, we've got Betty Booth, who spends her time on the eastern beaches of Honduras collecting plastic and then turning them into art.
Oh, my goodness.
We'll have these upcycled carnival games that are just going to be such a blast to do a homemade high striker, a strong, sort of like a strong arm hammer game, and different activities that I think are just going to be such a blast.
So this is this Saturday, noon to 5 at the Rail Yard Park. If people would like more information on Reunity Resources, they can go to reunityresources.com. Juliana Ciano, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.